actually looking in the settings here as to how to do the double push to talk, where you like tap it twice and it just stays open until you hit it again. If you see my lips light up often, it's not that I'm trying to speak and I can't. I'm trying to do the double push to talk. Where you tap it twice and it's supposed to stay locked on. Right, now it's just stuck on. Hey, 50.
Even honky.
I've been discovering the expense of cheap computers.
That can happen.
However, I have upgraded my aging technology hacking machine from a P4 to a Semafron 1250.
Well, at least that's some improvement. How are my sound levels?
Start off a little rough, but you sound good now.
Okay, I haven't changed the gain any, but you guys were a bit low, so I brought up my volume.
Well, I haven't done much with it except throw a bunch of hardware into it. USB 3 card. I had a little weird issue about putting a PCI SATA card in it, because it turns out that on the motherboard they have the exact same SATA system, and it was getting into a conflict between the two ports on it and the four ports in the card that I put in. But now my P4 is using that card, and it most of its storage is SATA. PCI driven SATA, so it's not that fast, but it is SATA, not IDE.
Hey, 50, any movement on the 3D printer front?
No, I've got a Raspberry Pi over there ready to hook up to it, but that's all I've done so far. I haven't got into it to start configuring it yet. Didn't get as many things done this last week after I got back from Ohio as I figured I would.
I've been learning the ins and outs of the hot end of a 3D printer, the hard way.
Did you mess something up or have to replace parts? Or
yes. Thank goodness parts are cheap on Amazon. So, I mean, for like a pack of, like, what was it, 8 of the little heat blocks was like $10. And a pack of like 4 of the throats plus a couple of nozzles was only like $10. I mean, I bought like a whole new hot end, but now I gotta fix something just so I can print out the thing to attach the new hot end. So, yeah.
Well, if it's easy, anybody could do it.
Is it a new hot end or a new improved hot end that you're hooking up?
It's a Chinese clone of a new improved hot end.
Well, gentlemen, I've actually moved to solid state storage. In a limited way.
Why in a limited way?
Because the buying all new SATA hard drives ate the money that, and also the solid state storage that I'm working with is compact flash.
Well, that's about the most expensive way that you could do it.
Well, I'm planning on using compact flash in a couple of machines, especially my old 64. Peter, I hope you're doing well wherever you are. I'm planning on putting in or programming the CF card with some repair stuff and whatnot, that on the 64, where I can keep it out of the boot order, I may keep it in the machine, and on my old hacking P4, I'll plug it in when I need it. On the old P4, it may turn into the install media. This old Dell, when it talks about CD-ROM boot, it really means it. It doesn't want to load anything that's bigger than a CD. So I put a compact flash to IDE adapter in the remaining IDE chain used for the CD burner. And now I've got some way around its limitations.
Quiet so far in the chat tonight.
What's that?
I said so far it's quiet in the chat tonight.
Yeah, it goes off and on.
I'm going to announce my move to Debian, I guess.
What, just straight up Debian?
Well, on my 32-bitter, I'm probably going to move to Q4 OS, which is a Debian derivative, and it even has an XP package, XP4Q4, or XPQ4 gives a very Windows-like behavior. It's based on Trinity, so it's lighter than KDE on the old hardware.
Yeah, I know it's supposed to be light. That's what came on my Pine book. I really didn't like it. No, I guess it isn't what came on. It's what I put up. That was the first Linux. that was the first Linux I got installed on the EMMC. And then I figured out, thanks to Door, I can use any of the distributions that were made for the Pine 64 itself. So, but first, I think that was the only choice I had, was QoS. And said I really didn't. Well, you guys go back, look and listen, or anybody listening, go back and listen to that episode. I really did not like this.
Well, I'm a refugee from XP, so something that's XP-like, especially on a machine I'm just going to be hacking on with old square screens, is okay with me. Eventually, a lot of these older machines I hope to be running, not running from console, but running over the net.
What, run them headless and then just kind of VNC into each machine?
Well, they may have a head, but I will be VNCing or X2Go, something like that, into them from my larger screen desktops. So what they actually have for their native desktop is not so much an issue.
Now, have you played around with X2Go?
I haven't yet. I've heard good things of it, but I don't know whether it's better than VNC or whatever. Once I get the hardware somewhat stabilized, I'm hoping to build up the network as a bunch of connected computers instead of each one being a separate island.
Have you ever tried TeamViewer?
I've used TeamViewer on Windows. I really prefer a more lockdown solution inside the network.
I can understand that.
The free version of TeamViewer has an unknown amount of reporting home.
Right. I like TeamViewer because it's great to connect to non-technically oriented customers. You just say, just say, go to this website, click that button, and, you know, I'll walk you through. But of course, I guess the way I get around, if I don't bill hours, that I do remoting it, you know, helping a customer remotely. But, yeah, that professional license is a big pill to swallow if you actually want to use that in your day-to-day business.
So just like, I don't particularly care for the Chrome desktop experience where you can do remote desktop through a Chrome browser. But I think Google has its thumb in the pie somewhere.
Okay, what you were saying on IRC that X2Go works really nice, especially on local network.
Well, my local network is, as far as possible, gigabit one of my laptops doesn't have USB 3, so it's not really driving the gigabit dongle as fast as it could, but everything that I got, I think, has got gigabit capability of some kind.
I don't think I've ever tried X2Go. I'm going to have to take a look at that, K-Wisher. Thanks for bringing it up.
Also, there's something I just saw on YouTube. Somebody has taken and built a kit for Raspberry Pi to be a music player for those with Alzheimer's.
That's interesting. Can you elaborate more?
It is a laser-cut wooden box. It has two knobs on it with rotary position things that are used. One is used for volume. The other one is used to select songs. So it's basically built sort of like an old school radio. It runs. You can run a Pi 0 or a Pi 3, whatever you want. And it's fairly simple hookup. It gives you very detailed directions. You just put in a SD card with the songs on it, and he's got a version of Raspbian or what have you that is dedicated to this application. So it's a standalone device. It has a headphone jack, a light to show that it's powered on, and a couple of the rotary encoders for controls. Dead simple. Everything's laser cut wood. And you just put the Pi in the thing and the case puts together just sort of like a paper doll.
Seems like the only hard part would be those knobs.
Yeah, it sounds like if you didn't want to build that, there's a lot of ideas there that could be applied to other cool projects.
Right.
Well, yeah, this guy's father had what he called dementia, Alzheimer's, just like my mother had. And he said that he really enjoyed his 40s songs. So this was designed to be a dead simple. I don't think there's even a power switch.
What's the size of the box? Is it like a small Raspberry Pi type box, or is it like the old timey radio about the size of like a toaster?
It's, think of it as a roomy Raspberry Pi case. It can hold a Pi 0. The application will work with 0, or it will work with a 2, 3, whatever.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of applications you could apply that to. I've seen a lot of projects with Pis. You know, somebody's downloaded all the old radio serials off of archive.org. You know, you could hook up the button to just randomly pick one.
Well, this uses a rotary encoder, so you just twirl a dial as if you're tuning a radio station. Designed to imitate a basic old school radio, except you don't have any kind of tuning indicator.
Do you have a link for that?
No, damn it, I don't. But I'll have to look around. Just because my mother died from the Alzheimer's, it stuck in my mind pretty hard.
Now, why is it geared towards people with Alzheimer's? Is it just because it looks, it's a simple design?
Absolute minimum design. Looks like two, maybe one inch knobs, which are made out of two layers of wood. One to grip the shaft of the rotary encoder, and the other one to be a cap for it, so that it looks like, you know, a little wooden box, like it would, like you'd have almost a crystal radio or something in it. Got a headphone jack, got a light for power when it's powered up, and these two knobs. One of them is the volume knob, and the other one is the song selector, which is a rotary, just as if you were sweeping an old-school radio back and forth.
I think I found it. I posted a link under your name in the show notes, Netminer, but I found it on Hackaday.
Also, I found an interesting YouTube channel called Aging Technology. Actually, Rapidly Aging Technology. He talks about a lot of P4s and Pentiums and stuff like that.
That box looks cool.
And if your current desktops are missing the feel of a real computer, that is to say, a 3.5-inch floppy drive, somebody has made a USB to floppy interface. With appropriate cabling, you can plug it into a USB port inside your motherboard and just put it into an external or an outward facing 3.5-inch port in your machine, tower, or whatever.
Does anybody have any 3.5s still kicking around?
I do believe that they're still available. Somebody cornered the market on them some years ago.
Why?
Yeah, Sigflop was looking for them for a couple weeks ago for, I think, one of her, I don't want to say chiptune, it's not that, demo scene projects. I've got a few of them back in a closet.
Yeah, well, I think there's somebody that sells them new old stock.
A 5.25. Anybody got 5.25 kicking around?
I believe the same source has 5.25, but they're less popular.
Well, if all the retro computing out there, you'd think somebody'd still be making them.
Actually, the thing that I was thinking of getting was a solid state floppy.
Right, I'm surprised somebody doesn't make that again for the retro computers if for nothing else.
Actually, what they make is something you can put in a 3.5-inch bay, plug into your floppy drives, and it writes an image to a selectable image to a flash drive, USB drive. That is to say, you can have floppy 850 having something on it, and a different image for 851 or the other 800. You just dial which image you want, and it accesses it, hooks it up. That's what your operating system believes is loaded into the drive. Now, some clever guy should imitate what IBM had for 8-inch drives, which was a they had a jukebox.
Maybe I missed 8-inch drives. What's an 8-inch drive?
8-inch drive is the original IBM that started out at, I don't know, something ridiculous, 120K or something, single-sided.
Yeah, they look just like 5 1/4, but they're 8 inches.
Also, at one time, they were used to replace punch cards. You'd enter your stuff into this dedicated desk machine that would have one or two keyboards, a little tiny CRT, and you'd punch in the data instead of putting it on punch cards. Then you'd take your disk over to your IBM, whatever, System 3 or 360 or whatever, and put it in as if it was a stack of punch cards. The Tandem station had two keyboards, one screen, which was split by mirrors so that half of the screen, little tiny screen, was seen by the person using one keyboard, and the other half of the screen was seen by the person using the facing keyboard.
That sounded like fun.
Well, no hanging chads.
Very nice.
The customer service engineers did not really mourn the passing of punch cards.
I don't think anybody mourned the passing of punch cards.
Don't forget paper tape.
And the PDP-11 operating system that ran on cassette tapes.
I remember we used to use cassette tapes to run programs on my old Texas Instrument. We used to hook up to the TV.
Yeah, I had a color computer that used cassette tapes.
I think it was kind of cool. It could play like Atari games. It's got a little slot where you can jam a cartridge in for like Atari games. And then it had a full keyboard to it. And I think my father programmed some game for it using BASIC, whatever that version of BASIC was at that time. My early introduction into programming. There was a book, Programming in BASIC, where they basically had like text games type things that you can sit down and just copy straight from the book all the information and then save it and then run it.
Actually, my first data storage device was a Pi Plate.
And which one was that?
Well, it was a Pi Plate containing yellow, low-speed paper tape, BASIC. In high school, we had a single teletype that ran off a Wang something or other, buried at the other school, other high school, and that's how you loaded your programs, and that's how you saved them. 10 characters per second. Paper tape, all those Unix cryptic commands came from the fact that they were originally punched in on a 10 characters per second teletype, and nobody wanted to type 4 letters when 2 letters for CP would do.
Makes sense.
Actually, I'm tempted to use some of my older single core machines to host some of the emulators.
What are you emulating?
I don't know. Maybe PDB-10, maybe a VAX, maybe an 11. I don't. SimH allows you to emulate, I don't know what it is. Must be 10 or 12 machines, maybe more.
What are you using to emulate?
There's an emulator called SimH that runs under Windows and Linux and Mac, and I could run an ITS machine, I could run TOPS 10, TOPS 20, all the big deck iron, running it on a P4 or my single core Semipron.
Well, there's a time. There was a time I used to run a bunch of emulators. This is back when I was under Windows, but to retro machines. And you had ones that, you know, they were the hardware and emulated the hardware and the operating system. And so you just open it up and there was your machine and a window. And there are others like Sheep Shaver that just, it emulated an old 6K Mac. So you actually had to get the floppies and install an operating system on it.
Well, the thing that I'm thinking of working with, it does that kind of hardware emulation. Also, with these emulators, they've actually found bugs in the original system because you can configure machines that wouldn't make economic sense back in the day. You know, with 7 expensive disk drives when somebody would move to the next size up and buy only 3 of them. They even have a serial tape drive emulator that would use your PC. Well, it's the most delicious little hack that uses a PC, a serial line, to emulate basically what were floppies. But the software version can have basically less limited size. You haven't lived until you've tried to run floppies over a serial port emulated by a data tape drive.
So no matter, what do you have for single board computers?
Nothing at the moment. My single board money has gone into the retro computing world. After a while, I'll end up with single boards, I'm sure, but I had a chance to get it to upgrade from P4 to 64-bit by picking up a cheap Semipron e-machine, so I jumped at it.
What'd you have to pay for it?
Well, I paid like $130 for that and a decent 1280 by 1K monitor.
Well, I was going to say, I mentioned on the show when I got it, right before the last show, I got a Core 2 Duo, like 17-inch laptop for $75 off eBay.
Well, this was a small collectible store, and they were closing, and this was sitting on the shelf, and I said, you know, can I try it out? It was a Vista machine. It's only got, I think, 2 gigs of memory in it, but I may see if I can go to two gig sticks. I would have not got them now, but that's going to be about $50 from my local supplier.
Yeah, you got to be careful. My little, I still haven't got it put back together. My little Panasonic Toughbook. I looked on, what is it? It's the website just sells Memory Direct, and then they sell it under a different name on Newegg or whatever. But it was, you know, one of the direct memory suppliers, and they said the box could go to 8 gig, and it didn't, you know, it wouldn't recognize the 4 gig SIM. So, and unfortunately, you know, my sob story, if that is, if I just wanted to replace one SIM, I could have got to that from the memory slot on the bottom. But for some reason, they built the thing. All they would have had to do is make the door big. But they made it so if you wanted to replace both memories, you had to take the whole computer apart. And then, you know, you go in from the keyboard side and pull the motherboard out because the SIM was on the other side of that. So, and then it didn't work, and I wasn't very happy. So you got to watch, you know, if the original specs say one thing, and sometimes, you know, it's just because the memory wasn't that big when that machine was built. So sometimes you can get away with putting more memory in it, and then I found out sometimes you can't, even if the company selling the memory says it'll work.
Well, the P4 is now got 2 gigs in it. It's originally a 1 gig machine, and the Semaphron has got 2 gigs running in it. And it's that's supposed to be its maximum, but it's PC, 5300 memory? So I can think about getting a couple of 2 gig sticks. But I was more interested in nailing down the hard drive storage. These single core machines are basically going to be prototyping server as targets of servers so that my desktops have something to talk to. They're not going to be designed to be desktops. They're going to be designed to be places where I can stick stuff, have common files, maybe even do a local mailer or something. Excuse me, gentlemen, are we putting on a show tonight?
Well, I kind of thought we had been, but yeah, it concerns a full hour since our normal start point. We ought to officially get the show started.
What, you guys want an intro?
Well, since you're volunteering.
Yeah, I don't mind. Welcome to the Linux Slugcast. We are an open podcast slug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you'd like to join us, please visit linuxslugcast.com for the server details. We also have a Mumble how-to on the site explaining how to configure Mumble. Then just join us in Linux Slugcast room. During the live show, if you are unable to join us in Mumble, you can listen to us streaming live. You can also join us in IRC on Freenode, /LinuxLugcast. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to discuss, please email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com. We also have a Google Plus community site, a mailing list. Please visit our website for the direct links. This is episode 88, and with us tonight is Mr. 5150. 50, what's going on?
Well, I'll get to my presentation, but I just got back from Ohio Linux Fest last weekend.
Very cool. And with us, as always, is Netminer. What's going on, Netminer?
Hacking my rapidly aging technology. And just trying to stay on the trailing edge of tech.
It's an interesting place to be. All right, so let's start with feedback. So on the G Plus site, Kevin Wisher put in there a link to using, it was a Magpie link for using a 3D printer with a Raspberry Pi. And by the looks of it, it uses Repetier Pro, or you can get probably just the free Repetier host. The Raspberry Pi, and what they have here in the picture is it looks like a screen, so I'm wondering if it's a touch screen, and it looks pretty cool. I'm not sure if I would do it. Every time I look at something like this, all I think of is how like Octopi just seems to be easier, because anytime you want to connect to it, you can connect it to basically any machine through its web interface. 50, did you have a chance to look at this at all? Or
no, I guess this is the first I've seen of it. I'm looking at it now.
I wonder what that image is, because that shows a picture on the screen up on the top left there of the little box that they have the 3D printer in, and it's got all these little icons all over the place. I'm wondering what that is, because Repetier host looks a lot like the, if you've ever seen screenshots of what Octoprint looks like, where it has like the big buttons for up, down, left, right. I don't know how to describe it, but it's got a very simple interface, and then you can attach things like cameras to it and whatnot. It's about the same, but it would be a direct connect as opposed to, like I said, Octopi runs, or Octoprint runs over a web interface. To me, that web interface would be a little more intuitive, because I can use it from desktop, laptop, phone, anywhere I can connect through the web, I guess.
Right. I was thinking I'd have to set something up on the Pi connected to the printer and then set up a VPN to get into it. So, yeah, you would think a web interface would be a lot easier to deal with.
I got to admit, though, it is very pretty.
Of course, we don't know if this isn't web-based.
Like I said, I don't know what Repeteer Pro is, but Repeteer Host is not.
And it's, yeah, it says optional, Repeteer Pro subscription, so I assume that costs money.
Right, Host, the regular Repeteer Host is not, but the Pro probably does.
Of course, there's nothing that says you couldn't have more than one piece of software on the Raspberry Pi and decide, you know, try them side by side, pick the one you like better, or maybe the one may be better for one kind of job, and one may be better for another one.
True.
That's a nice thing about these software tool sets. It's not like a big machine shop where the lathe and the milling machine are going to eat half the place.
And I don't know about not being a web interface. You come down here to the paragraph right above 3D printing for Raspberry Pi, it says, for a better experience installing Repeteer Host on a PC, and that's, you know, it's a full-size PC, we'll offer a more streamlined process that allows you to slice STL files and upload them directly for printing, as well as offering built-in direct control of your printer without the latency being introduced by using a web browser. So that would imply to me maybe the free version of Repeteer maybe is web-based.
I think it's saying that that Repeteer Host is better because it's not going over a web browser. Say that they think the web browser is a slower thing as opposed to Repeteer Host, which is a direct connect thing.
Okay, you're right. There's Repeteer Host and Repeteer Pro. Okay, I understand now. Well, thanks again, K-Wisher. Your input has, been welcome as usual.
So I've been trying out the double tap to talk. I thought I had it down pretty well earlier, but now if you notice the my lips lighting up and then shutting off real quick, it's not that I'm having trouble with something, it's that I'm trying to do the double click to talk and I'm messing it up. Haha, got it to stick. All right, so our next bit of feedback was from Ken Fallon. Last week we had talked about him offering that he wanted to try to get a booth set up at FOSDAM for podcasters. And we had discussed whether we could try to put something together, like some stickers for to send his way if he gets the booth set up. And he responded, at the beginning of this is because we had talked about the fact that we should have responded in email as opposed to just responding. We didn't respond yet in an email, but we did respond on the podcast. So he starts off with, hi all. Yes, I do listen. Thanks for the offer of stickers. But if we get a table, we'll need a lot more than 50 stickers, more like 5,000. FOSDEM is a completely different kettle of fish to normal events. And then he says, please stop playing the HBR Call for Shows theme. No, seriously, please stop playing the HBR Call for Shows theme. By the time your show is released, we either have stopped or there is a flood of shows coming in. Then we get the crying wolf effect. He gives me a link to another promo to add to it, the new one by Klaatu. I think that's the one that they play on Tilts now. Because I'm serious. If I hear that theme one more time, I'll have to ask you kindly again to not play it. So apparently, after this last bit, HBR has got a flood of shows in, and now he doesn't want to hear the begging for shows anymore.
Well, actually, I just looked. They've got shows for 12 days, and then there's almost like a week gap, and then three or four more shows. So if you've got a show you want to do, sorry, Ken, but I mean, right now you guys are a little short on shows for real. And I usually look at it before we do this show, so it's so I'm current. But yeah, we won't play that every single week like us and some other podcasts have been doing. But this time probably, you know, if you've got one to do, I was kind of looking for myself because I've been wanting to do another one here and probably have to do it this next few days or try to. So, not crying wolf, but just look at the shows. I mean, a lot of times you look at that, your show can be played in X time, you know, so many days, and you actually look on the uploads page and there's already a show in that slot. It didn't finish processing yet. No. This time there's nothing there. So I will do a call for shows, or at least a small one. If you've got one you think you want to do, let's do it.
Thank you, Ken, for making me have to work. Now I have to completely redo my whole setup for automatically editing the shows. I got to come up with a whole new, redo the whole outro thing. Making me work. What the heck? I should leave it in there just to see if he'll email back again.
Okay, you want me to go on to Ohio Linux Fest?
Go on to Ohio Linux Fest.
Okay, this will be my third year going to OLF. I did see some people I knew there. I didn't see, you know, there are a lot of people that unfortunately weren't able to make it this last year, but hung around a lot with Kevin O'Brien and Joel McLaughlin and John Hall from Doors Crew and it'll come to me. No, but yeah, there were some people there I knew, and I found going to Linux Fest. I mean, yeah, it's great if there's people there, you know, but I can enjoy myself even if there's not anybody there. I probably learn more because I spend less time messing around talking and more time going to actual talks. Like this year, missed, I think, yeah, the first one on Friday. Oh, I had the... just a second. I had the schedule queued up, then my browser moved. So I have having way too many tabs open. Now, they didn't seem to have a whole lot that was appropriate, in my opinion, this year for Early Penguins track. They kind of Friday, you know, Friday's light on the talks. Usually there's only one track because a lot of people still working on Friday. They can't get off Friday, you know, can't get their bosses, let them go on Friday to come to a conference. So it's split between the Linux certification training and testing. And again, like I said, the Early Penguins track, except for one of these, I'm not sure if I would agree if everything was Early Penguins. Did make it to the open source on a mainframe, or Linux and open source on a mainframe. Again, that's probably something nobody but enterprise people are going to be doing. Certainly not Early Penguins. What's new with Perl 5? So that was another one. But I'm not sure that's a beginner type topic. And then John and Joel and I went out for lunch. And we're going to go to North Market. And I'll get, I did take some pictures. So for those of you not familiar with the area, I did take some photos, sort of. We'll work through them and maybe sort of orient you, so you know what's there in the neighborhood. we went to, well, we had Joel's car, and they're doing a bunch of construction along North Market and the north part of the convention center. So we tried to get up there and found out we really could not get a parking space. So, and of course, since Joel's from Columbus, and he doesn't usually spend much time in the north part, I guess, but he did, you know, two or three restaurants, and we went past the one that was kind of, you know, more of a smorgasbord type thing, like, you know, more than one kind of food, like North Market, and it was packed too. So we went to Schmidt's. I'll find that link and put it in the notes, because this was a really good German restaurant, very popular. You can get a wide variety of beer there. A couple of them are their house beers. They're actually made by Elevator Brewing Company, which I got to visit too while I was there. So, you know, nice German black beer. Had the sausage buffet. So you had a lot of, you know, traditional German sausage and sauerkraut and, you know, pickled cabbage and, you know, various potatoes, all kinds of other stuff. And not just sausage for entree, but, you know, hadn't had any chance or opportunity to get transportation to go that far away from the convention center for lunch. So that was a really nice break. I mean, North Market's great, but, you know, you get used to your eating there every meal almost while you're there. It is nice to take a break from it. Didn't get Command Line Tools. That was at 1 p.m. That would be probably the closest thing to the early Penguins, and I did not get back for that. Sustainable Foss Communities, IoT Botnet Wars, that was more of a security one, and, you know, showing how the IoT devices are, you know, what you can do to make your network more secure. And then the keynote was great with Karen Sandler. If you don't know, she is the, she's a lawyer for FSF, if I'm not mistaken. Though she does have, I guess, a degree in engineering as well. And because of some heart problems she has, at a very young age, she had to be implanted with a pacemaker. And she put it off for years because, you know, it was closed source. She couldn't take a look at the at the code, and pretty much in the industry, everything is security by obscurity. I mean, they just figure nobody's going to try to mess with it. And now that you've got hers isn't, I guess, but now that you do have remote programmable pacemakers that, you know, just connect to a wireless network without any encryption or security, usually. That if you think about it, that's not such a good thing. They're just assuming nobody's going to know the software, you know, have a client that could get in and mess with it. And some days somebody's going to do that and mess somebody up pretty terribly with it. So, and, like a lot of things, it's not until the first time that happens and they can prove it's happened, nobody will do a thing about it. So, that was kind of emphasis of her talk. She did one very similar for Hacker Public Radio a few years ago. Unfortunately, and I kind of volunteered us all as a podcasting community. Fortunately, that didn't work out. But I mean, since we did not. You know, we did not have enough podcasters there to have a podcaster table like we did last year. When I registered, I said, "Yeah, I don't want to vouch that I am going to personally edit all the audio files, but would you be interested if I could get enough podcasters together to take that on? And they said, yeah, that's not going to work out because we're not recording at all this year. I guess there, I didn't see anybody with a camera. They said some of the stuff on Saturday would be video recorded, but there is not going to be anything on archive.org this year with all the talks. So if you weren't there, you missed it. And actually, I'll jump back to Thursday before everything started. Nobody's around I knew, sort of had to make my own entertainment. And, you know, getting in early Thursday afternoon was by intent because usually everybody's there and we go down to Barley's and have a few beers. But, and so in the spirit of that, that was the first place I hit after I checked in. Had their incredible fried sauerkraut balls and a few beers, and then I did look in the area to see if there were any other brew pubs. There were a couple. Let's see, there's something. Well, it'll be here in the pictures when we get to the pictures. There's, because I got a couple growlers. One of them survived being shipped home. The one from Elevator Brewing got broke, but the one from the was it Black Wolf, something like that, that survived. So I found both of those places, and getting the pictures, I'll talk a little bit more about where those places are. So that was kind of my day Thursday, you know, just following my nose around. And so that might go better with the pictures, so we'll get back to that. okay. Next day was, and, you know, kind of went out, hung around after. You know, goes Joel went home. Well, okay, now for dinner, and that'll be in the pictures too. The dinner was sponsored by Fusion Storm, and I'm afraid I don't know what they do. Somehow tied into Dell because they had some swag there on the tables that was labeled Dell and Fusion Storm. But I guess they paid for the beer and the taco bar on Friday night. So that was there close to the vendor area, or what would be the vendor area the next day, I guess. And there's some pictures of that, and it's just, you know, if you've ever been to OLF, the same taco bar, they kind of have the hotel cooks up every year for those things. So it wasn't, I mean, it was good, and we didn't have to pay for it, and there was free beer. So that ran out, you know, I found my way back down to Barley's for a while. You know, then the next morning, going back to the schedule, and where there's a lack of tracks on Friday, there's a plethora of tracks on Saturday. There were, well, technically six, though one of them was the open source workshop where they just had some Linux computers set up, and where, you know, people wandered in and said, you know, said, hey, what's this Linux thing all about? You'd have some volunteers there to walk you through it. And when I got downstairs on Saturday, I met up with Joel and Alan Metzger, who is also from the Linux League Tech Show. You've heard him on there. That's who I was trying to think of a few minutes ago. And well, we wound up touring the vendor area again. I mean, most of it was open the night before or set up, but, you know, there were a few tables that weren't operational. So the day before, so we went through, kind of topped off on whatever swag I didn't have from the day before. So really, that walking around and talking and all that took up pretty much most of the morning. I said, well, I'll go, you know, I'm going to take my stuff upstairs and put it back in the room and come back down. Then I looked at the time and said, oh man, it's noon. I better get downstairs and see what everybody's going to do for lunch. And I caught up with Verbal. He also was there. I forgot to tell you that. And so he and a friend of his we all walked over to the North Market for lunch and ran into better, you know, like everybody else. John was there, so and I've got some pictures I took of the North Market. And also on the way out, there was sort of a little farmer's or flea market sort of thing, and like a street, not street party as such, but, you know, things not normally there where they had booze from some local beer pubs. So I, you know, took a little longer at lunch, had a beer there. And took some pictures on the way back. Like I said, this is the first year I've been up there, if anything, but a cell phone camera. I did that cheap used camera that actually has a zoom lens on it. I don't know DSLR if the lens doesn't detach. Maybe it's, you know, point and shoot is maybe a better description, but it does have a lens, and you can see some of the pictures that it does not have the fisheye that I always got trying to do a distance photo on the cell phone. So let's see, when did I get back Saturday after? What was the first thing I saw? But if you go to ohiolinux.org/schedule, you can see the type of things that were there. And, you know, there's a lot of things I would like to have seen, and, you know, conflicts and too many things all at once. Let's see. What did I get back in time for? Okay, yeah, I guess this was later. The Open WRT for embedded development, that was interesting. So, I don't know if I remember half of what was said. There was a lot of things I wanted to look back at on that one. And let's see. I guess the privacy and anonymity track after that. And then, of course, at 6 o'clock, Taurus Balog from OpenNMS talked about the things he did to be successfully start an open source company. So pretty much the history of him, you know, getting backing and where he worked before and how that all evolved. And I've been following Taurus Balog for a while. Don't remember. I mean, he is sort of a web personality, and I didn't realize his connection to OpenNMS, but I have seen him as an authority on open source. And I guess I always assumed Taurus Balog was a screen name. No, that's his actual name. But, you know, I thought the highlights were his talk and Karen Sandler's the day before. Unfortunately, Karen couldn't stay for Saturday. I never got a chance to talk to her directly. Did get a chance to talk to Taurus Balog. Maybe putting a bug in his ear about Kansas Linux Fest. That's what I still need to do, is let those guys know that I talked to them and you know, let him know that time comes, give him an invite. Okay, let's go now. And this is mainly for you guys who are on the show, if anybody's listening. If you go to the, I guess you guys, I don't know if you can see the show notes because they're not posted yet. Well, I'll post the link in the IRC. That'll be as close, probably. I imagine if anybody's actively listening, you'll be on the IRC as well. Of course, if you're listening later, you can you can then follow the link in the show notes and see my photos. And these are not quite chronological. You know, Nat Miner and Honky, you guys still with me here? Are you able to look at that photo album I created?
Where is it?
Where I put the link to Ohio Linux Fest. Where I've got a hyperlink in the show notes. It says Ohio Linux Fest 2017.
Yep.
Okay, the first few shots, those were actually Saturday, I think, before or after. Maybe after we got back. No, it's like before I went to North Market. I did that, then looked at my phone. Oh, it's noon. I better go. I tried to do them. These are out of the window of my room at the Hyatt, which was the host this year. Everything was in the Hyatt rather than the convention center. But, you know, if these were cell phone camera pictures, everything would look 1,000 miles away. So the Hilton's also connected to the convention center. It's to the north through the window. The next one's just a big building under construction.
50, real quick. That link is going to just give me a 404 error.
Okay, let me put it in the... I bet I need to share it. Okay, now it says anybody with the link can see the photos.
Yeah, I'm still getting nothing.
Yeah, I think it's a different link. Try the one I just posted in the IRC. And I've changed the link on the show notes as well.
Okay, we're working.
Okay, great.
How do you refresh the show notes?
I think they automatically refresh. I mean, I think any change that you put on there updates for everybody in real time, but, you know, you could just refresh the page like any other web page. Can you see it yet, Netminder? You guys still with me?
Yep, we're here. And it seems like the link that you put into the show notes seems to be working too.
Okay, yeah, I changed it. I didn't realize that'd be a different link. I did think earlier, I need to share it. I just didn't do it. But these are, you know, first few shots are just what I could see out out the window of my room. Now, that is one thing that's changed this year. You know, every time I have tried to get a room before, if I didn't already have rooms set up, you call like the Hyatt. And, so now we already sold out the block of rooms. And then you ask, okay, do you have any rooms at a regular rate? They said, no, we're all sold out. Everything's gone. This time, about a week before OLF, I got a email from them saying that, hey, would you like to upgrade your room? You know, we can move you over the side of the building so you can see. See the other side of the street, or see the street in front of the building out of your room, than behind. Or, you know, I think that was $10. $30 was a bigger room, yeah, I guess. L-shaped room rather than the square room, and $50 would get me a suite. Now, I don't know if that gets an extra bedroom, but you'd have a living room with a fold-out couch or whatever. So we might watch for that for, if a bunch of us are going next year, see if we get the suite. or something at the discount rate. But of course, Ohio Linux Fest is not enough just to fill up the Hyatt, but they must not have been as busy for that weekend as they usually are. I chose not to do any upgrades, so I found my room quite satisfactory for, you know, the time I spent in it.
So I can't see what the labeling is. What is that massive building in the darker picture top right?
Well, that's still under construction, I think.
What is it?
I don't think those are finished walls. I don't know what it is offhand.
Oh, okay. Whatever that is a massive building.
Yeah, and well, I think that's the building that if you look at the Hilton one, the first picture.
Yep.
That's the building up in the top right-hand corner. That's almost off.
Oh, yeah?
I want to say at least. Then the next one is just more industrial areas, smokestacks and stuff. You know, I like that big Wonder Bread sign in the next picture over on the right next to the church. Must have been, you know, is or was some sort of Wonder Bread processing site. Next picture down, that's the Hampton again. That is the Hampton. You've seen the Hilton. That's the Hampton. And across the street from it is still the convention center. So this is, you're taking let me scroll down because I know the name of the street, but I forget it. Nationwide. Okay. The street out in front of the Hilton and the Convention Center and the Drury and all that is Nationwide Boulevard. So you come out of the hotel and you walk to the first corner to your west, and then you go north, and you get to all this area where North Market and Barley's and all that stuff is. Don't know why I didn't take any pictures from within Barley's, because that's like my favorite place in Columbus. I guess I'll do that next year. But yeah, that real interesting building was sort of the turret thing on the corner. That's the Hampton. And it's weird how, you know, you've got some of that old construction and you got like, you know, modern, maybe 70s type of construction on top of that. Filling in gaps in the building or something. I'm not sure how that, you know, it'd be real interesting how that came about. There's a sort of that kind of theme on the Hilton as well. The block just to the south of that, that's where Barley's is. So, you know, that's where everybody seems to meet up to get a drink among the podcasting folks. So you'd come out of the Drury or the Hyatt, and you'd walk to that first corner to the west past the Hyatt, and then go north and go past the Hilton and, you know, a couple more blocks down, and then you'll find Barley's, and, you know, they have all their own selection of beer. I mean, they're a brewery. And then up above, they also own the bar that it's an arcade. They got a bunch of old arcade machines. They're free to play. And then sort of a bigger selection of beers from around the area. And on the same block to the east of the of the Hyatt, you see the Drury there, which is, you know, a lot more conventional construction than some of the buildings around it. We'll get presently to do some exterior shots of the Hyatt, and it is just an incredibly impressive piece of architecture. Now, a lot of people like the Drury better because they have bigger rooms, and, you know, when we get together later in the evening, you usually sit around and and talk and drink and stuff. The rooms are either, you know, it's got a bedroom, bathroom, and then like a sitting, either a sitting room or a conference room. So you either have a couple couches and a TV, or you have a conference table and a TV. Either one worked pretty good for entertaining. I guess that next one, I got that church in the frame. That's pretty, yeah, I just like getting the picture of the cool architecture. Smith Brothers Hardware Company, that's, you know, kind of the gentrification project. All those, I believe, it looks like to me, have been turned into apartments. We kind of have that in Old Town in Wichita. A couple, it was like an International Harvester building used to be. That's now all apartments. And the Keen Cutter building is a high-end hotel down there. So, you know, I really like to see the old buildings repurposed rather than knocked down. It looks like, I don't know if they've got a greenhouse up top on there. That could be interesting too. And then a couple interesting apartment buildings that round one, I found out later, actually know somebody who lives in there. And then we get to the North Market. If you take the corner either before or past Barley's, and you head to the west, I don't know why I'm waving my arms in the air. You can't see me waving my arms in the air. You go west a block from there. That takes you to the North Market. And if you can see from these interior pictures, the North Market is just a bunch of little stalls, most of them food related, some more of grocery store things, but most of them so that you can order food and eat it there on the premises. And there's a balcony around the top that has tables if you want to eat there. We ate outside. It was actually really good weather. I mean, unseasonably good. Usually it's jacket weather by the time OLF turns around. I guess it's usually more in the middle of the month or in the first part of the month. But, you know, I ate the Belgian place. Actually, the Italian-Belgian waffle did not turn out to be as good as I thought it looked like. But, you know, I'm sure the stuff, you know, flavors of India next to it. Green olive, Italian place. I think that's more cooking supplies, vinegar and stuff, but I think you can get something to eat there. Spices, you can see in the next couple pictures. Yeah, a place to get fish. There's like a bar and a liquor store in there. You know, Southwestern food, ice cream type places. Yeah, this last one down here, where it says the Championship Salsa and hot sauce, and I wish this place was local. They had all these tasting jars, and you can see there's like probably, you know, 30 jars of salsa there, arranged in a row from mild to hot. Of course, I am the idiot that went clear down on the left end and said, "Yeah, let's try this hot one." Wow. Wasn't Nova Pepper. It was, not Ghost Pepper. Not the real, you know, like the second one down from the hottest known pepper. And, you know, you try it and it's like, oh, that isn't bad at all. And, then just boom. And, you know, I guess a couple guys who are, you know, get stuff from there, they knew exactly what I got a hold of. They get it and like it. You know, sure, this would be exactly the type of thing Tom Lawrence and the SMLR guys weren't there this year. Unfortunately, they had a prior commitment, but this would be exactly down his road. So it's great that the stall that sells ice cream was just, you know, right next to the place. And then, you know, the beer van there. There were two or three of them there that, you know, had a van with taps coming out the side. This was the, outdoor party sort of thing that they were having. Of course, that was the only vintage van, so I took a picture of it.
You said it was you said it was a hot pepper, but not the hottest?
Yeah, what a ghost pepper. What is that one?
Is it like Scotch Bonnet or Habanero?
No, hotter than that.
Okay.
Let me look real quick. I can probably find it quick enough. Oh, a Reaper. That's what it was. Carolina Reaper.
Now, are you big into hot peppers?
Some. I mean, I like, you know, I thought, oh, just this little bit on a little piece of tortilla. Surely I can take it. I mean, like I said, it was excellent. Just start down and say, oh, that's not bad at all. And then, boom. You know, I cannot imagine sitting down and eating a jar of that salsa. I would be in the hospital.
See, I like a little bit of heat, but I could never get into any of the stuff that's like the hot stuff. To me, it still has to have flavor to it, you know? And I've tried some stuff where, you know, it's even had flavor to it, but like an hour or so afterwards, I can finally feel my lips again type hot. And then that doesn't seem worth it to me. I don't know. What am I? Little side tangents, I guess. I like hot stuff, but I don't like that burn your lips off hot stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, this had flavor. At least at first it had flavor. I don't know. I'm sure they have somehow engineered it so that, you know, you have that and then just boom. You know, because I've had stuff before, like I said, just hot. You know, nothing but Scoville. So, my hat's off to these people, because you know, definitely I would, you know, if I had a way to get it home, I would have picked something down towards the middle, and then the front row was more novelty ones, because the one I also tried, the one on the front row clear to the left-hand side, and it was like pumpkin salsa.
Well, that's a bit of a difference.
Yeah, in the spirit of the season. Yeah, so all the kind of, you know, different, you know, mango salsa, fruit salsa, you know, all those were the front row. And, you know, I don't know if any of those got incredibly hot. And then the back row was just your normal, just salsa, you know, mild to hot. Yeah, if I'd had more time and I could have stood it, you know, I would like to try a bunch of the others at some point. Okay, right below the salsa place, Novak's Patio, which is a kind of cool location. That's actually the bar right next to Barley's. The only reason I show that, they stay open about an hour later. So, you know, since I'm an idiot and I stay up, there's been two or three times I've wound up there. As you know, it's and when it's chilly, you know, it would have been good this year. Usually it gets a little chilly up there by 3 o'clock in the morning, and you know, really they're just beating your eardrums out with rock and roll up there. But it's probably the latest place it stays open. So okay, next to that, I've got another cool picture of the Hamptons. Like, I love that architecture. And then you see that church again, you know, from the North Market. And then the picture to the right there, that's the convention center. Now, the front side of it is more normal architecture, this strange asymmetrical Art Deco. I don't know if it's not exactly Art Deco. So if Weeb was here, he could tell us exactly what that is. But clear across, that is still the convention center. Even though it's meant to look like separate buildings. You know, clear down to the end where that pink part of it is. And another, you know, that's another picture of it. And I just took a picture of the Hampton sign because I knew I wouldn't remember what that was. Okay, now down in the convention area, you have all these great walkways to connect the major hotels and some of the office buildings to the convention center. So you're seeing the walkway there. It goes across that north-south street from the Hilton to the convention center. And the tall building that you're seeing in the background there, that is the Hyatt. And if you scroll down, this is coming up on the Hyatt from the backside. Be about, you know, my room would be one of those windows facing us there. But you can see there how impressive that architecture is, because the part where the rooms are is actually built on freestanding pedestals. So if you look there, you know, you got the glass part where the rooms are, and you got sort of a concrete base. I don't know if that's completely solid, but then you got, you know, you got that first pedestal that goes down to the ground. So, you know, five stories up, essentially, it's a freestanding building, almost. I mean, the lobby and the restaurant and all that stuff is down below, but it's really not. It's, you know, it's attached, but, you know, it's separate from the room space, essentially. So, I mean, yeah, a lot of people like staying in the Drury, but I got to tell you, that is that long, narrow, you know, building up on pedestals is some of the most impressive architecture that I've seen. Not that I'm any kind of expert on it. And, you know, and that going off to the left there, that's still the Hyatt. And you can see on the picture on the right side where it says Starbucks Coffee. And you can see, you know, if you look on the left-hand picture, you can see where that is. I took that picture because the convention rooms that were used for OLF are just on the other side of those doors. So they're right across from where the Starbucks is. Then you come back up to the corner by, well, this is approaching the corner back by the Hyatt, where I said go around the corner and down north towards Barley's. Catty corner across is the Nationwide building, also very impressive. It's got an external elevator. That's what that slot is on the side of the building, or on the end of the building. I've been there 3 years and I haven't seen that elevator move yet. So I don't know if it's a liability issue or something. I mean, that would be incredible to ride up and down. I don't know if you have to have a reason to be in the Nationwide building, but since it doesn't seem to be operational, I haven't tried it. And right on that corner, there is another set of overhead walkways that ties all those buildings together, and actually, you know, goes down into the Hyatt, goes across to the Nationwide building, buildings on the other side of the street. And if you were to go from that corner I told you about and continue on to the west, then that's the Nationwide Auditorium there. And then there's the AEP building there on the left I've showed you pictures of. And I know this is probably about as interesting as watching paint dry if you're doing this without the listings, without the pictures. But like I said, I kind of like the area down there. I thought it might be interesting for the folks who've never been there to see, you know, kind of where all this happens. You know, below that you can see the, you know, that elaborate walkway more. Let's see, that next building right across from the Hyatt. Oh shoot, I was going to look this up on the map. It's another big, you know, that building. You've seen the two pictures, the, you know, kind of square, you know, the one straight back across the road, that's an office building. But that sort of brown building there with the peaks on the roofs above every window, you know, sort of sawtooth top, that's another major national fancy hotel. And well, if I looked it up on the map like I should have before the show, I could remember which one it is. And then that sort of red building next to it, that's that's the lofts. If you looked at, you know, that's where that sign it says Max and Irma's and the Lofts Hotel. And I'm thinking it's more of a residential hotel, but I'm not sure. I've never heard of anybody staying in it or that other one for OLF. They don't ever participate in the discount. But Max and Irma's is also a good destination that the podcasters usually tend to wind up at some point. So that's more, it's not incredibly expensive, but it is, you know, more of a high-end type restaurant. And then there's a picture of the Drury, which would be across the street from there. And then you may have heard me talk about the Red Roof Inn. There's a space there. There used to be a building. And then there's that next red brick building with sort of the banner across the top. Lower floor on it used to be a pretty good seafood restaurant that I've eaten at. It's gone, and there's going to be a steak restaurant in there. Still on the same block, go under the overpass, and it's a walking overpass there. You know, there's where the Red Roof Inn is. So it is not terribly inconvenient from the convention center. And the secret of, you know, getting a cheap room in the Red Roof Inn, they get progressively cheaper the longer you stay. So the first day is almost as expensive as staying at the Drury or the Hyatt. The second day is, you know, probably a 20% discount. Third day is 20% off that. So, you know, Red Roof does not participate in the room blocks, but you can probably stay there cheaper than either the Drury or the Hyatt. And a lot of people were saying this year, well, John was saying he was over at the Drury, and for his situation, it was actually cheaper, even though the Drury this year didn't participate in discounts either, because it came with a really good complimentary breakfast. It came with free parking, and he brought his car, where all, you know, everything is a la carte at the Hyatt. So those are, you know, really those are probably your main options. I was Red Roof is definitely not what you'd call a luxury hotel. I mean, it's not bad, but it's no better than staying in any Red Roof or even Motel 6 along the highway. So as far as service or whatever, you know, but it is inexpensive, and they did have that sort of security lapse that didn't hurt anybody last year that I've gone into before and don't need to again. The next photos are, you know, of the convention center. Well, the one on the right is, you know, the main entrance in the convention center, and you've got that whole glassed angled atrium out front, really impressive. The next picture on the right, if you didn't understand before what I meant about the hotel being built on pedestals, you can see it there. And you see that, you know, the next one down is the, you know, that's the lower levels where the lobby for the Hyatt and the restaurants and stuff like that are, you know, that's more conventional and goes straight into the convention center. Whereas you can see there's like a, you know, a floor or two's gap between it and the part of the hotel that actually has the rooms in it. And the picture over, you know, next to that on the right, that's the Nationwide building at night. I tried to get some pictures of the Drury because looking at it, it's impressive. But, you know, if you take a picture of it, it was just dark. There wasn't anything to see. All right. And then, next few photos, I either had the choice of flying out directly on Sunday, and I'm not done talking about the convention yet, but Just figured we'd hit these photos in order as I post them. But I was looking for things to do on Sunday because, well, usually everybody get together and have breakfast. We didn't this year. You know, because nobody hardly was there, or everybody, and who was there was leaving, so, or had already left. So, but, you know, my flights out were, you know, either 6 a.m. in the morning or 5 o'clock that afternoon. I thought, well, time I get home to Kansas, day is shot anyway. So, might as well look for things I can do in Columbus. And I looked up the museums and stuff, and I came across the Wagner Hagen's Auto Museum. Well, if you scroll through the pictures, it's not so much exactly a museum as it is one person's fairly large car collection. I talked to Steve Wagner, met me there. You know, they don't have regular hours. You got to contact them, leave a message, tell them when you want to be there. So we talked about his collection and cars in general for about an hour. Nicest guy you'd ever want to meet. He's the guy standing next to the Nomad when you scroll down. But it's nothing like the Ford Museum in Detroit where you're going to spend a day and a half in there. But definitely worth seeing if you got an hour to kill in Columbus. And the rest of my pictures are cell phone pictures. That's why the rest of these got uploaded first. I just dumped them off the camera and then deleted the ones that were either duplicates or didn't come out. Yeah, first one I took just to tweak Dor a little because I know he can't eat any kind of pastry anymore. So I know he loves the Biscoffs that are served on American Airlines. So got my breakfast and I took between flights and then, you know, set the wrapper there. And so I'd like breakfast burrito. This is fairly late in the morning, not, you know, so vacation. I got a beer. Sue me. The next one, those are the fried sauerkraut balls at Barley's. Next few shots are from that arcade I told you about. Next one is the growler for Wolf's Ridge. That one survived. The elevator growler did not. So, you know, those are great, great folks who give me a good excuse to go back there next year and get another one because they kind of stayed open. They were actually supposed to be already closed. The actual sort of brew pub thing they have, I guess they have a restaurant where they serve it. But I actually found the sort of brew pub thing, but said, no, I walked past it twice because they had big like garage door open. So many of these places are in, you know, former garages. But then they had a perimeter gate and it was closed. I thought, well, maybe there's another way in because it's only 8 o'clock at night. So I walked all the way around the building and nothing was open. So I, you know, they were where I could shout. I was, you know, are you guys open? You know, I said, no, we usually close at 8 o'clock, but they had people in there who are finishing their beers. So, yes, yeah, I really like to pick up a growler and stuff. So I could, you know, they're nice enough to let me in. We had a couple beers. We talked about computer security. The boyfriend, I guess, of the girl who was working the bar who was there, he at least understood what Linux was. Hadn't had much experience with it. And a bit, you know, the Wolf's Ridge place, you know, it's kind of very, very trendy sort of, you know, hotspot type thing, or is trying to be. So, you know, you had the real mixologist bartender there, and, you know, doing caramelized lemon slices for decoration on all the drinks. So, you know, hadn't seen that before. That looked interesting. But, you know, turn the beer menu over. The beers were fairly reasonable for a brew pub. Had a thing like they had like a cream ale, and then they had a cream ale with orange and all that, and then a cream, you know, with that and vanilla and coffee. So I had sort of the orange cream ale, which is pretty good, and a couple other things. And I know I picked up the beer menu from there, but I don't know if it ever got in my luggage. I'll have to look. But then I turned it over, and there was the dinner menu, and about had a heart attack because you had appetizers on the right. It was like pâté de foie gras, and that was like $20. And then on the left, and then on the right, you had the entrees. And the entrees were like, you know, the entrees were all like $40. And it was like, you know, like big plate of pâté de foie gras. But no, there, you know, there was some good looking stuff. And the guy next to me at the bar, he did have the steak before I left. And, you know, I was like, yeah, that, you know, because it was marinated and all that stuff. That looks like it'd be a pretty good $40 steak. But I wound up getting back to the hotel and before the bar closed there, having another local beer and the lamb, which, you know, I was just going to get the Reuben sandwiches. Then I said, well, you know, you don't ever see lamb in Kansas, even on a menu anywhere. So I had the lamb, had like, trying to think. The sauce was made with pomegranate sauce, sort of. And you see mashed potatoes and asparagus and stuff. And that was somewhat more reasonably priced. I think it was still like $20 for it. But, you know, the hotel bar and restaurant isn't bad port in the storm. And this was Friday night, remember. Or no, Thursday night before anything else started where I, you know, went on my pub crawl.
What did you have in those growlers?
I brought them home empty. In fact, I shipped them home separate. You know, they wouldn't let you get on a plane if they had anything in them. But, you know, I always just, you know, put all the swag and the growlers in a box and ship them home. But this time we really didn't have enough packing materials laying around. You know, last year wasn't a problem. But this year it's like, oh, we don't really have boxes and packing materials. So, but the guy said, oh, let me, you know, this is the difference between service, you know, at the good hotel and service at the Red Roof Inn. Red Roof Inn, you know, would have said, yeah, you're going to have to take that down to the UPS store or whatever, get taken care of. This, you know, they have their like concierge thing, and, you know, they'll get you taken care of. And they are, you know, they do have a way to ship stuff home UPS, but it's just, the box was too flimsy, and we didn't have enough packing material around at this time. But yeah,
did you just get a growler? You didn't get anything in it?
Yeah, I collect growlers. but no. Now the Elevator Brewing Company had a couple from them. I think one was a. Oh, and I took a pic. No, I didn't take a picture of the beer menu. Because my battery's down low enough, I could turn the phone on, but it couldn't take pictures. I didn't know that was possible. But, you know, one of them I had was a plum beer. You know, so I always like those places that experiment with the seasonal and different flavors and stuff. You know, and Wolf's Ridge was kind of the same way. I doubt that they're menu probably doesn't change as often, but they had some interesting stuff on there. So, and then the next picture down is when John and Joel and I went to the Schmidt house on Friday. And again, this was just to get door. Took that picture of the pastry counter and sent it home with them. And you know, the cool thing about Schmidt House is, you know, pastry or a slice of cake or whatever comes with the buffet. And then next to it, you know, that was the Friday night buffet that was provided by, was it Fusion, whatever they are, that I mentioned earlier. And I should go over and mention some of the sponsors, but a taco bar sort of thing. And it's good. It's, you know, plenty of stuff on there. And then the next night, it was actually, I think that was paid for by OLF from the contributor fees and the participation fees. But it's essentially the same thing, but they also had like a hot wings bar and a salad bar and a dessert, you know, cake and stuff. So next level up. But essentially the entree was pretty much the same thing the next night. See, got a couple pictures. Really, I was taking pictures just to get a copy of the slide information. I'm so far back. But the one on the didn't get that many pictures actually in conference itself. I always make that mistake. But the one on the right is that IoT security session. And then that one is Taurus Balog. That's not him in the picture, the middle picture. And then those other two, you know, we're down here to the bottom. Have you guys, I don't know if Netminer want to see it. Honky, you know, did you see the post I made on G+ from the As We Are art project?
No, I didn't see that.
Okay, this is, and I, you know, Alan found it Saturday and posted pictures, so I went looking for it before I left Sunday morning. And what this is, it's just this 14-foot high head. It's, you know, everything's a little off because they took, you know, generic head dimensions, average head dimensions from, you know, from anybody. And but you, it's the whole outside is covered, you know, with colored LEDs. And you go around, there's an alcove in the back, and I think there are like 32 cameras. You know, you got a screen and you type in your email address and, you know, other particulars and whatnot. And then you you know, it shows, okay, you know, put, when your face is in the right place on the screen, then you're positioned right. Of course, it doesn't work with this, so I took my glasses off, and they took the picture. And so that picture on the left is, you know, its interpretation of what I look like. And it'll, you know, it puts yours up for about 30 seconds so you can take a picture. Then it goes to cycling. And I think it puts everybody's image on for about 3 or 4 seconds after that, just continually cycling. So they're up to like 2,000 people who have participated so far. So it would be, you know, weeks before you'd see yourself again if you're to stand there just looking at it. And I didn't realize until I came home and started looking it up that base on the bottom rotates. So at night they leave it on, but they turn around 180 degrees so it's facing the windows. So at night you come by and there's this 14-foot head in the window.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I really like that. I really looked hard to see if there, you know, any indication of, you know, what type of software was used. I'm certain most of it's probably custom anyway, but there is the author spread all over, but it does say, oh, and here is this signage firm that actually built the thing. So I'd be really interested, you know, if the artist, you know, if he just went to the engineer, you know, did he engineer any of this? Did he come up with specifications and software and all that? Or did he just go to the signage firm and say, build me a head I can project people on? But obviously that other face is, that's the next one cycle two after me. So you can, you know, I put that in there so you can sort of see the contrast between one subject and the next. And of course, they get your email and they send you the 3D image at home by email. So that's the GIF that's going around in the bottom. And actually, you know, if you look inside, you know, when it comes around the big open thing in the back of your head, you know, and you look inside, that looks a lot more like me than, you know, the image that's there on the outside of anything. Okay, the other two photos on the bottom, same weekend, and we should have coordinated with them, was CDEX, which is a game developer conference. And, you know, I took those pictures and posted the G Plus, and, you know, I'm sorry, but these guys have a way better vendor area than we do. You know, because all those booths, a lot of them had games running. Now, I don't know if they were, you know, some of them definitely, you know, probably AAA games. Some of them are probably, you know, more indie developer games and stuff. But I guess you could walk around there and play it. Of course, I didn't have a badge. Didn't want to test whether, you know, if I walked in there and started playing video games, if somebody come along and said, sir, you're not supposed to be here, sir. So, but yeah, if it ever happens on the same weekend again, because, you know, we had one of their guys come to our after party. He's perfectly welcome, I guess. So, well, he came fairly late. So wasn't like just drinking all the beer or whatever, but, hung out with him some. So, a lot of crossover in the same, you know, same sort of interest. So it'd be cool if something like that happened again. Put a bug in the organizer's ear. Hey, work it out so we could go see their stuff. They can come see ours. You know, whatever. Well, that's all the pictures. Did want to talk a little bit about sponsors. We, you know, that's what a lot of people said. We were light on sponsors this year as compared to even last year. I think we had about as many participants. So, you know, Joel was saying on Tilts, he didn't think there was many people there as even last year. And he, you know, of course, the year before that, it was down in the convention center, clear down, all, you know, almost as far down as where all this CDEX stuff and all that was. And I don't miss the half mile walk, the length of the convention center, for sure. But I hate to see, you know, Ohio Linux Fest keep getting smaller and smaller either. You know, as okay, Fusion Storm, that's what I was trying to, they sponsored the meals and the beer the first night. As far as major corporate sponsors, we had Rackspace and Linode. Cover My Meds, it's really an insurance company, but I guess they use Linux internally. They've been there the last 3 years that I have. But the rest of these, Fast Switch, I think that's a hosting company. Nutanix, I think, is also a hosting company. New Horizons Computer Learning Center, so that's, you know, that's more of a, I don't know if it's online or all hands-on education. Arista, Lulzbot, you know, their list of sponsors were not represented in the vendor area. Chris, of course, from Think Penguin was there. Silicon Mechanics, Fedora Project was there. Nimble Storage, Hewitt Packard Enterprise Company, it says, okay, is there. Didn't see, you know, or is a sponsor. I didn't see him there. Lopsa, FreeBSD, ESD, FSF, OpenNMS, Linux Professional Institute, I guess Ohio Python, Linux Foundation. There's been, the last couple of years, a pack of Boy Scout troops. That's where we know Ed Little from. But this is a different pack this year, but showing how they were, you know, they used Linux in organizing their Boy Scout troops. Rackspace, Pear, and I mentioned Pear, Sticker Mule, and ShowClick. So, Well, that's where I could have sworn those pictures I had. I had the picture of the, in fact, this first one I put up is a picture of the swag that I took after the box showed up yesterday. So that's on my G Plus if it's not on that page of pictures. But I want to thank all the sponsors. There was, you know, a couple levels of participation by people just going to show. There was enthusiast and which is sort of pay what you want or nothing. And and the other one, supporter. And I went in as a supporter, which I usually do. It was more expensive this year. I think it used to be $100, is $150, but did include noon meals if you wanted to participate. I didn't participate either day. But you get that at supporter level. And, you know, I figure if I can afford to get, you know, book a hotel room and book a flight, I can go in as supporter. I think on the day supporter was $200, but since I pre-registered, it's $150. And get a t-shirt. So, but the way the organizers were talking, the corporate sponsorship was not what it had been in the past. So they were really counting on the supporter registrations and hoping to see more in what they did. On Saturday, you see a whole bunch of unpicked up enthusiast name tags. And I think that's because they could get in, ahead of time and register as an enthusiast for free. They, you know, a lot of did that just in case they wanted to come and then they didn't come. So those were all those tags laying there. But, you know, probably no, except for the cost of printing the tags, probably no huge financial effect, either positive or negative, to the show. But yeah, I always enjoy going to. Well, I always enjoy going to Linux Fest in general, but OLF is one of my favorite ones. A lot of times that's been the one where I see the most people I know. Let's see. Any more questions about OLF? The rest of the stuff I can run through real quick. You know, like I said, I don't know how this plays on a recording. Hopefully, maybe you can guys take a look at those. Look at those picks, make it a little more interesting for you when you listen to this later. I brought the Pine Book with me, and they swabbed it for whatever residue they could find. Both times, coming and going, because when they scan the thing, they see a big empty box in, you know, which confuses them. So they don't know what the thing is. didn't get as much done in this past week after getting home. A lot of it was posting stuff to social media and spent more time doing that this last week regarding OLF and things. But did get, you know, a couple of projects I've talked about doing is gave up on the Odroid to run the Hero 3D printer. So I got an RPI 3. I'd originally thought of putting Octopi on it, but I mentioned this 2 weeks ago on the show that heard Dor and Rich talking on the Maker Show that they're running Diet Pi and then just installing Octoprint. And I figured that'd give me a more flexible machine to work with than just installing Octopi. So I'm going to try that, but it's sitting, you know, it's assembled, but it's just sitting there, was able to pre-configure the Ethernet settings. And I put I bought another RPI at the same three at the same time to set up my voice assistant experiment, and it's got Raspbian on it because that's what's recommended for the for Respeaker. And no, the Respeaker is that four speaker hat that goes on top, so it should have more range than just your average plug into the speaker jack speaker or USB speaker, I guess. But got that link to where I got it. We talked about all this before, but got put Raspbian on it because that's what it was suggested for Assistant Pi. And Assistant Pi is that project where you can run Google Assistant and Alexa on the same. So Alexa, the client for the Amazon Echo, but you run them both on the same hardware at the same time. And jumping down to hardware links, I've got a story there about Echo is now going to be able to make free calls in North America. And this is bad for things like the Mycroft AI, some of the other projects we've mentioned here that I still want to try, but you know, you just can't compete with the major companies saying, oh yeah, make free phone calls. You're not, you know, you're never going to be able to do that on Mycroft AI or one of the other independently developed, because they just don't have the corporate resources for it. So I think this is going to work towards being the beginning of the end, you know, for and that's bad, you know, but your independents are just not going to be able to compete with your Google Assistants and your Alexas. Okay, lightning storm before I left for OLF seems to screwed up the power box. It's got an external power brick on my PFSense box. It just keeps repeatedly. Looks like it's going to boot up, and it gets to where it should be booted, and then it just reboots. So I'm hoping I could just get a different power brick and fix that. Otherwise, I may have to buy another another small PC with the two or more Ethernet ports on it. Actually, I've seen some that I like better since the one I bought, so might not be such a horrible thing, except for the money.
Excuse me.
Yes.
I have some info if you're going to buy an upgraded PFSense box. You have to look around for a box that has the crypto instructions in it.
Okay, yeah, I remember you mentioning that before. That way you're not doing it in software.
That way that you're going to be supported on the next version of PFSense. PFSense is trashing anyone who needs software crypto.
Oh, that's right. Yes, thanks for mentioning that.
Which means I'll probably have to go to OpenSense or something. Just like I have to go to Debian on my 32-bit stuff because Ubuntu is dropping support.
And also, I may take the opportunity to take another run at the Banana Pi router too. See if I can't. The problem I had was the DDWRT, I guess it was on, or OpenWRT. I could never find the passwords. Maybe it's better documented now to try that. So Lease is a temporary solution. Sorry, Harky.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I hit the key. No, I'm good.
Okay. I know I tend to drone on and on and on and not let anybody else talk. So I guess if stuff like that and you can't get my attention, wave your arms on IRC or something. I did ask Tom Lawrence. If I said, don't, you know, I could not ask you to do the research for me, but he knows a lot about PFSense. I said, if you know offhand how to configure it, you know, for this guest account that I'm, you know, or guest interface that I'm trying to set up, because, you know, I don't have VPN or not VPN, VLAN. I don't have a smart switch, so I can't set up a VLAN. I just want to have this third interface and have it face the internet and not face my network, which is the opposite of what it does when you just plug in a USB Ethernet card. And yeah, he said, yeah, you do this, this, and this. And router got zapped before, or the PFSense box got zapped before I had a chance to try it. So I'm there at that point. And Netminer, do you have something?
That's pretty easy in the rule set, but no, I'm just saying, you were talking about the router, the ARM router project. Unless you've got one of the routers already, there is a new version.
Yeah, I've already got it. I've had a year and a half Banana Pi router. And this is the one built for a router. It actually has 5 NICs in it.
I would look carefully at that. I don't know whether they're NICs or switch.
Yeah, I doubt if it'll work as a smart switch. I'm sure it's just WAN side and 4 LAN side, you know, dumb switch.
I'm just saying it's actually 2 interfaces.
Right.
At most.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Okay. Link in there. The label I have is Red Hat offers free certification. Yeah, well. Fundamentals of Red Hat Enterprise Linux. Now, a couple years ago at the first Kansas Linux Fest, there was discussion on, you know, what the different Linux certifications would do for you. And the Red Hat were much less generally accepted, not accepted as being comprehensive, but they were a lot cheaper than all the other Linux certs. Now, this one is actually free. I don't know if this is going to be, well, you put it on your resume, but I'm not sure. You know, it's not like it's just going to automatically get you a job. But I think a lot of us could probably, you know, use some filling in on our fundamentals. I mean, us home hobbyist user, semi-professional user. There's a lot of things that just fall through the cracks because you've never had to do it. So, you know, I just think anybody listening to this who's interested in Linux, I intend to do a lot of things that I never do, but definitely I intend to follow this course since it's free. And like I said, I'm not saying do this and this is all of a sudden you're going to get a job in Enterprise Linux, but it's definitely going to get you, you know, closer, give you a leg up, and then maybe go on to some other certifications.
Well, it seems like a great way to get into the RPM. A lot of people are used to Debian and Debian-based stuff, and it will fill in a lot of the holes, both in your general Linux knowledge and in your knowledge of the Red Hat and Fedora and Calculate and all of those.
Exactly. I mean,
most of the stuff on the command line is the same, you know, and if you know how to use a one package manager, you can usually extrapolate that knowledge, you know, with a little bit of research on the internet. You know, once you've used one, you understand where the others are going pretty much. It is not so different. And, you know, and a lot of the stuff that would apply to enterprise and all that is going to be the same for one distribution as the next. So, I mean, I just don't think you can go wrong spending some time on that. Okay, three quick things in security news. And not so only one of these is directly Linux related. Apparently, they have traced some stolen credit cards that were found on a dark website back to Sonic. I mean, they haven't gone in and said, okay, here's the breach of Sonic. This is when it happened. What they've gone in and said, okay, here's this list of credit card numbers. What they have in common is they've all been used at Sonic. So, Sonic hasn't denied anything, I don't think. So that's just one of those things. You know, if you use your credit card Sonic, and I do, you may want to keep a watch on your account. This next one, actually, this came out right before our last show. I meant to have it in there. It's been discussed, I'm sure, many times on different shows, but it talks about how the Linux command line subsystem in Windows 10 is a perfect hiding place for malware, because none of the that part of it doesn't get scanned by any Microsoft or other companies' antivirus and anti-malware tools. So you could have something, you know, that would install under Linux and be resident in there, and it would not be found. So I'm sure there probably, it's been a month almost, and a couple of weeks, but I'm sure that's something that they're working on looking at. I don't know if you could, you know, run the Linux antivirus and declare it. No. Trying to think of it. It'll come to me by the end of the show, probably. I don't know if you run that just against the command line anyway. I think there's a command line version. But
yeah, ClamAV has a command line, you know, run that through its the area of Linux.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. ClamAV, thanks, Netminer. Honky, did you say something?
Nope.
Okay, guess not. Yeah, thanks again, Netminer. That's exactly what I was thinking of. So if you're running 10, and a lot of people are doing that, and then a lot of people are making use of that Linux subsystem, even though they have to run 10, make sure you look there. And completely disinterested to Linux, but it did come out in the news that the latest iPhones in iOS, you know, there are switches to disable Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, and they don't. So reminds me of the old simple router setup we had a few years ago. Well, not old, but thing to make it easier for people to put in passwords on their consumer routers and get them connected. You know, well. More to get it connected to wireless devices, where you just had to push a button instead of actually typing in a password, and that was supposed to be this, that was considered a certain security risk. So they said, okay, we'll fix it so it can be disabled, and it wasn't. So reminds me a lot of that. But this article does go down, you know, where you can go down into the operating system in iOS and actually get those disabled. Just for those of our listeners who, you know, are burdened with having to run Apple hardware. I feel for you. Okay. Talked about the Echo being able to make free calls in North America. Google Assistant is coming to Chromebooks, so you'll be able to talk to your Chromebook the same way that you talk into your phone or you talk into your Google Assistant device. Security-wise, I don't know if most people are going to think that's a good thing. Hopefully, at least there's going to be a way to turn it on and off. Okay, that was everything I had for this evening. I know I droned on and on about OLF and my pictures and stuff. But I just, like I said, thought it was a service for Orient people who've never been there and want to go, that they just won't be completely lost the first day where everything is. Oh, yeah, the other two bars where I picked up the growlers, go down to the east. Yes, to the east, past the Red Roof Inn, and then there's a street from there going south. Follow your nose along that street. Both those bars are down there a few blocks. And there's another one there. I guess it's a corporate brew pub. You know, it's not like local. They got same beer and same stuff all over the country. So, but those would be the ones within walking distance. We've always just gone to Barley's before. So just being on my own, you know, able to walk around on my own reconnaissance that one day gave me a little chance to explore I hadn't before. Okay, yeah, that's hopefully you could find something in there worthwhile for this episode. Ken, I hope we didn't just bore you completely to death. And that's everything I got for this evening.
Yep, me too. Good.
I was just going to say, I'm sorry, guys. We're pushing like 3 hours here.
It is what it is. Netminer, do you have any finishing thoughts?
No, just keep hacking that aging technology. Of course, at my age, my personal technology is also aging considerably.
All right, so our next recording date is October 20th, 2017. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Brome. We want to thank Tony Bemis from the Sunday Morning Linux Review for our web hosting, WordPress support, and our email list server. We want to thank Delwyn for providing the Mumble server we use and for creating the bot module. All you have to do is in our IRC channel, type .ns, and it'll tell you the next show recording date. So I have been Honky Magoo. With me was 5150.
So long, folks. And I won't be here on the next show. I've got a college homecoming and reunion that weekend.
Hopefully I can do some computer-related things between now and then. With me was Netminer.
Yeah, 50. You've got a reunion and you're going to be here?
No, I'm not going to be here.
Okay. Your first statement was a little negative logic.
Well, probably logic is lacking in most of my statements.
No, I got to object to that. I'll say good night, gentlemen, but you've been very helpful and very entertaining, and we wouldn't have a show tonight if it wasn't for a lot of your stuff. Thank you, gentlemen, and good night. This is Netminer out.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker Public Radio! Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community.
If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, and that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net/techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Blindridge, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like a gas, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it back.